when we see a $5 shirt in the store, it makes us feel really good because we think, wow, I have the power to buy this shirt, and I could buy 20 if I wanted to, and I could have, you know, a different shirt for almost every day of the week in a single swoop through the store. And it makes us feel really great and makes us feel rich and wealthy because we can fill our wardrobes with these types of cheap pieces. But what we're not thinking about is, what does it mean? What does that $5 shirt break down to? Because what a lot of people don't know in retail is that they have doubled the price of their wholesale cost. So when you shop at a retail store, that cost is double what the retail owner paid.
You're listening to Upside Down,
a podcast on spirituality and culture.
No topic is off limits, so join us for unscripted conversations on God's Upside Down Kingdom.
Hello, welcome to episode 32 of Upside Down Podcast. I'll be your host for this episode. My name is Lindsay Wallace, and tonight I have with me Kayla Craig. Say hey, Kayla.
Hello.
Hi.
And Shannon's not here tonight. We really hope she's having a baby. this is mid-December, so you guys won't be hearing this until January. Baby will be here, but we hope tonight, Shannon, that you're having your baby. And we have a guest host with us, Lauren Pinkston. Lauren, could you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm really complicated, but I think the quick and dirty is that...
Good, you fit in, right?
You'll fit in here.
This is your crowd.
I do. I feel like I'm joining my tribe tonight. So yeah, I live in Southeast Asia with my husband and my three kids, two biological, one adopted, and we do a lot of different things, but most of our work is kind of revolves around finding safe work for women and children at risk, and safe places for children at risk, and just business startups in general.
Nice.
Wow. I love how you're just like, oh, I'm just like business and, you know,
business,
just
something
stuff. Like, no big deal.
I still don't really know.
how long have you been at this, Lauren?
We've been living here for almost 4 years. We were out of country last year, adopting our oldest from Uganda. So we were out of country for 9 months, but, been living here for almost 4 years. And that's really crazy to think that it's been that long.
Yeah.
Also, fun fact about Lauren, the first time we met, we shared a bed together.
That's right.
And it was a rather small bed.
Oh, that's so good. Lindsay, you're one of, you know how you meet people online and you're like, man, I really like them so much. And then you meet them in person and sometimes it's kind of a letdown. I mean, that's never happened to me. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I met you, Lindsay, and I was like, man, she's just as legit in person as she is online. And we were able to I think it was like an 8-year-old's bed too. It was like dinosaurs all around us.
It was fun. So Lauren, we're going to let you kick us off, and I actually wasn't going to ask this question initially, but I think it's a good place to go first. You said that you try to find safe work for, did you say women at risk and children at risk?
Right.
So what are at risk of what?
Well, I want to be careful in how we talk about this, but we work with a lot of women and girls who have exited human trafficking situations. And I think when we use the word human trafficking, it's really easy to have a lot of images flood our mind of what that looks like, handcuffs, dark basements, things that the U.S. media has kind of pushed in front of us through Hollywood films, or even NGOs that have put out really compelling stories online. And so I'm always hesitant to tell people that I work in the field of human trafficking, because they either A, say that I'm a hero and a saint, or B, have a really different understanding of what that means in real life, especially in the context of the country where I live. So it takes a lot of, it takes a lot of time to have this conversation well. And so I think, you know, there are just people all over the world who are looking for safe work. And when safe work doesn't pop up, they'll do the work that's in front of them because they have to eat and they want to honor their parents. Honoring moms and dads is just such a huge, it's the core of this society where I live. And so if you're a woman, you honor your mom and dad by sending money back home and helping support the family. And, I live in a Buddhist community. So men will go and become a monk for 5-10 days. And that's their way of bringing honor and goodwill into the family. But for women, it's work and making money. And if there's not other work to do, or if it's not a rice harvesting season, then the most profitable work is selling their bodies.
Mm-hmm. So this episode is about fast fashion. So I'm going to ask you to tie that to what you just explained to us. But first, for people who are listening that maybe haven't heard that term before, or there's, I think, maybe even some misconceptions, could you explain what is fast fashion?
Yeah, so typically fashion styles are coming through spring and autumn fashion week that happens every year and is coming out of Europe and is really setting the trends for the colors and the hemlines and the styles of fashion that are going to be pushed into the big department stores on down to the small boutiques every year. But as fashion has, everything in our world has sped up with globalization, right? I mean, everything is just fast, fast, fast. And so this term fast fashion came about because companies are pushing new product, new clothes, new hemlines, new styles into their big box department stores every single week. And so you have new arrivals. You're just constantly having to keep up with the trends. And so that fast fashion is kind of based around that concept of what's happening in the fashion world now, where it's just boom, boom, boom. Everything is constantly on the move with what's on trend.
And with that, something has to give, right? Like, we can't just keep pushing faster, faster, faster. What is the give in that situation in fast fashion? And this is probably what Lindsay was about to ask too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every time that you're trying to mechanize something that at the core is produced by humans, you are dehumanizing the process. So at the core of what's going on is you have big companies who are coming into countries like Bangladesh and China and Nepal and Cambodia, and they're saying they're kind of waving their money over the heads of the factory, the garment factories, and saying, look, we'll give you this big contract, but we need this many shirts. We need 1.5 million pairs of jeans by this date. And we need it done for $5 because this store is selling them for $7. So can you make that happen? And if you can't make that happen, we'll go to another garment factory and give them our money, kind of thing. And so, you know, the garment factory owners and managers are taking that pressure and moving it down to the actual employees who are having to push out the work. And so in the end, what you get is cheaper prices, but cheaper materials and cheaper labor. And it's not healthy for anyone in the process. It's not healthy for the people who are creating the clothes. It's not healthy for the consumers who are buying the clothes either.
Mm-hmm. So can you kind of tie that into creating safe work for people at risk of human trafficking? And like, so what's the connection between, I mean, obviously that doesn't sound great, but what's the connection between the garment factories, human trafficking, and then the need for safe work?
You know, at baseline, I think I said I'm complicated. I started out as an elementary school teacher. That was my first job. My first degree was in elementary ed. And so I taught kids for 3 years, and then I knew I was moving overseas, and I knew that I wasn't very wise as a 24, 25 year old. Like, I had a lot to learn, and I didn't want to bring my Western perspective and dump it on a culture that I just wanted to be sensitive. You know, I wanted to be culturally relevant, yada, yada. So I went on to grad school and I studied international family and community studies and development. And I really came over here as a development consultant, actually, and through an NGO. And an NGO is a non-governmental organization. So it's a nonprofit that functions in different countries. So I came over here with a very nonprofit mindset and, how do we use our money to help people? And over and over and over again, I found that people needed work and they wanted to work for the things that they were given. They didn't want handouts. They wanted to have a way to provide for their families in a dignified way. There's a lot of things that played into this. I joke a lot and say that I didn't become a capitalist until I moved to a communist country. And there were so many things that I was starting to notice in the culture, a lack of entrepreneurship, a lack of critical thinking, idea generation. And so anytime that I offered like a small business loan or anything like that, no one was biting, and I couldn't figure out what it was that all of these things that I had studied in grad school that were supposed to work, you know, microfinancing and, you know, community development initiatives, nothing was working. And I was banging my head on the wall, like, what is happening? I thought I studied at the highest level. It's a PhD program. So I was like, what if I'm going to have to rethink this? And so when I started asking better questions and I started understanding the culture better, I realized that people wanted to come to work. They didn't want the pressure of owning a business. They didn't want the pressure of having to run paperwork. They didn't have the capital to start it up. And they didn't want to owe anybody anything. They just wanted to come to work and do a good job at their work. And they wanted a good employer. And that really revolutionized my way of thinking of what is the most missional thing that we can do in this community. And I think that it's to use our resources and our understanding of purchasing power and what people in the West are looking for to be able to speak into the kinds of products that are being developed in the East to then complement both sides. You know, people in the West want to be able to buy ethical products. At their core, I think they do when they are educated about the process. People in the East are wanting to sell those products. So how do we just speak into that process of here's a design, here's what Westerners will like, here's the colors of the season, this is the kinds of things that are on trend, and how can we help you, you know, how can we support you to create those types of products that will then be marketable to the West and kind of merge the two. I don't even know if that answers the question, but people are looking for work, you know, and we want to make sure that there are safe work options out there so that they're not choosing to work in a garment factory for $90 a month with other types of harassment and abuse going on the side.
Yeah. So what, I guess, so that is, I want to make sure we make the connection between, like, why is fast fashion bad? Mm-hmm. And I think what you just ended with is really what,
yeah,
maybe we haven't been presented with, you know, outright. Like, if you haven't come across, you know, a lot of what you're talking about, then people don't understand, like, well, if I can get a $5 shirt at Old Navy, like, what's the big deal? You know, but what you're saying is the person, like, we strip the dignity out of the process, and the person who made that shirt was, you know, what you just said, like working, making $90 a month.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not to mention other things that they're dealing with.
Yeah. When we see a $5 shirt in the store, it makes us feel really good because we think, wow, I have the power to buy this shirt, and I could buy 20 if I wanted to. And I could have, you know, a different shirt for almost every day of the week in a single swoop through the store. And it makes us feel really great and makes us feel rich and wealthy because we can fill our wardrobes with these types of cheap pieces. Mm. But what we're not thinking about is what does it mean? What does that $5 shirt break down to? Because what a lot of people don't know in retail is that they have doubled the price of their wholesale cost. So when you shop at a retail store, that cost is double what the retail owner paid for the item.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's terrifying, really. If you think about like going to Walmart and like seeing, you know, their markdowns are so like barely there. And so you have to think, what are people making who made this shirt if I'm buying it for $250?
Right. That's so insane. $250. Yeah, absolutely. So what? Wherever you're shopping, Walmart, I even felt this way going into Joseph A. Bank, you know, to get my husband a suit for a wedding last summer. Wherever you go, look at the price tag and then divide it in half immediately. And you know what it costs to put it on the shelf in the West. Okay. And then out of that, you have to subtract workers' wages. You have to subtract the overhead for the managerial staff at the location where it was made. And then you need to go all the way back to the seed that was planted to grow the cotton, to harvest the cotton, to color the cotton, to weave whatever design is in there, then to stitch it together in the factory, then to pay the overhead cost and the international shipping taxes to get it on the shelf so that you can buy it. And if that's $5 on the price tag, there's no way that anyone was treated fairly in that process.
Mm-hmm. I really love what you said about how I've never thought about purchasing power in the way that you described it, that it makes us feel powerful. Like I've always thought like, oh, I have the power to spend my dollars wisely, which is true, but I've never thought about it in the sense of how it makes the reversal of that, that like it makes me feel rich and wealthy to be able to buy 20 right. shirts.
Yeah. It's like the psychology really of consumerism.
Yeah.
Pretty much sums up a lot of struggles that those of us in the West are facing right now. And I don't know, like, do you see that, Lauren, where you're at too in Southeast Asia? Like, is that also, because that's where a lot of these clothes are being made. Is there that same kind of fast fashion mentality there?
It's exactly the same. And so I'm in the capital city of the country where we are. And we have a night market that sets up every single night, and it is just, we're losing all of the really beautiful handiwork that used to be done in the country, and it's being replaced by cheap clothing coming out of Cambodia and China that border this country. And so people are going, and they feel really good when they can go and buy a $3 shirt and they can wear it to work the next day. And that is a status symbol for them as well. And so I don't want to peg this on Westerners and say, oh, you know, we're the only ones who are struggling with this. It's a mm-hmm. worldwide problem.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. I noticed I love following you on Instagram, and we'll give you all the shout outs at the end too. So you guys can all follow Lauren too, because you're going to want to, but I loved this, just broke it down so easily for me. And it was just really easy for me to visualize and understand that when we're buying fast fashion, it costs us three things. It costs us time, it costs us the environment, and it costs us other people. And to me, that just really simplifies the problem with this idea of buying and buying cheap commodities, you know, that's at a cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, getting to the point where you're uncomfortable with it is a journey. It's such a journey. And so for anybody who's listening, I don't want anyone, the expectation for me is not that you're going to listen to this podcast and then all of a sudden change all of your buying habits, because this has been a seven year process for me, I think. And I'm still not a teetotaler. So don't hear me saying that my closet is only certified fair trade clothing or made by my tailor locally. It's not still. We all have basics that we need in our wardrobe, and the slow fashion movement has not yet caught up to meet the consumer needs of the West. And so, or of the world. And so when I'm sharing, I just don't want anybody to feel guilty. Like, oh, I'm such a terrible person because all of my clothes come from Target. It's okay. Like, I was there too, you know, and I was in a place where I would walk into a room or into a restaurant and there would be somebody else wearing the exact same shirt that I was wearing, or, you know, I wore the exact same shoes as everybody from Old Navy, or, you know, and so there was a time in my life where fashion was just so readily available and I had the power to buy it all and fill my closet with it all, that I didn't appreciate going slow about it. And it was so cheap that I could throw it away. If I wore a shirt one time and I didn't like it, it was gone. And I didn't feel bad about it because it was $5, right? $10. And I think just knowing the kinds of waste that we're creating in doing that, this is a really crazy statistic, but the average American throws away 82 pounds of textile waste every year.
Oh gosh.
82 pounds of textile waste. So just imagine what the landfills look like. And if this is my plug for the True Cost documentary, I wish that I could just buy a disc and send it to everybody and say, just take an hour and a half of your life and just consider what's going on with the fashion industry and the kinds of waste that we're creating. I'm not a self-proclaimed environmentalist or any of those things, but I've seen it. I've seen it in Haiti and I've seen it in Uganda and I've seen it in Cambodia. And I've watched what happens when we throw away the clothes that we've bought thinking we'll like it and wear it. And then we don't wear it. And so we give it away and then it's shipped to other countries. And then it's left on the side of the street and cows are eating it and dying. And these cows are the livelihood of the farmers in Maasai Mara, Kenya. And so just the whole circle of how our consumption and our waste is impacting the globe is really something that we need to consider, I think.
Yeah. Can you unpack the time, element of that? 'Cause I think you've hit on, we definitely talked about other people and you can add to that as well, mm-hmm. but you just talked a little bit about the impact on the environment. What do you mean when you say it also has to do with our time?
So the amount of time that we're spending thinking about what we're consuming, where we're going to purchase it, and where we're going to store it, and how we're going to organize it, and how we're going to keep up with all of the trends is exhausting. So much mental capacity is taken up by thinking about what we're going to buy next and how we're going to source it and where we're going to keep it and how we're going to organize it.
Yeah.
It just takes a lot of time.
Lauren, why did you come on and kick me like that?
Because
I loved what you said about being on a journey, because I feel like I started having my eyes opened, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago now, slowly. And I'm still like working, like plodding on this journey, like trying to do better and to be better. But it's nothing in our culture makes it easy. And that's not an excuse, but it is like, it's hard. And I sometimes feel like I'm never gonna be able to be at the point where like everything I'm buying is ethically made or fair trade and ethically sourced. And so I don't know, like, do you have advice? Because I'm sure there's a lot of listeners in this boat with me. Like, what advice do you have for people that are kind of, they know, like, there are some options out there, but it still feels pretty overwhelming. And then there's a Target run and there's this and that. Like, what do you tell people when they're kind of starting on this journey of being a more thoughtful consumer?
That's a great question. And I just want to say first that I'm right there. I'm sitting in this with all of you and I am a consumer at my core. And so just know that I'm just sitting there with you. I think that you just start small and the rest will come. The rest is going to come. So I don't know. Do you guys know how an inchworm works? When an inchworm is crawling, the head goes first and then the back end has to catch up to it so that the head can move forward again. And I think that that's how it is starting any new shift in how you're doing life is just start and then let the back catch up. And I think for me, that was it. I just started buying fabric and I went to a tailor here in town and our seamstress and I was like, can you help me make this? And it looked terrible, y'all. It looked like the things that we started making together were so ugly. And I was like, forget it. This is why I go to Target. Like, it's not stylish. It's not cute. And I don't ever want to wear it. And I just spent $50 on it. And so I was mad. And I was like, oh, is this really worth it? Is this something that I'm willing to dig into? And so just know that as I'm saying this today, there are pieces in my closet. There are staples that I have in my wardrobe that are not probably classified as ethically made or sustainably made. Okay. But I have been wearing those for 4 years now and right. trying to slow down my consumption to where I have to do this self-talk every day before I leave my house. Like, am I 100% on trend? No. Am I, you know, like, am I wearing a new shirt that I feel really special in? No. But where is my value found in those things? No. And right. so just doing this self-talk every single day to where I become more satisfied with the clothes that I have that are older. And mm-hmm. when I am purchasing new products to add to my wardrobe, thinking, okay, where I'm looking at the tag to see where was this made. And I'm looking to see what the price is. And guys, I hear the criticism that I get all the time is, well, not all of us have the luxury of being able to spend $60 on a shirt. If I've heard it once, I've heard it, oh gosh, so many times. I get it. Like, I so get it. I
hear your grievances, Lauren. This is the place.
I'm living on a missionary salary, guys. I'm not. I have a business that I'm still trying to catch up on in the States, you know, with our initial, you know, put in all the investment that we put into it. So it's not like I'm just swimming in dollars, but I think if I can buy one shirt for $40 that's going to last me 4 years versus buying five shirts, you know, that are much cheaper, but that are going to wear out and then I'm going to hate. And, you know, before long, you guys know when you buy something and you put a lot of money into it, you feel invested in that piece or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you spend a lot of money on your house or your car or your kids' education, whatever you're putting your money in it, you're going to feel more connected to that thing. And so if I'm just buying a $5 shirt, I have no emotional attachment to that shirt and I'm going to throw it out very easily and not feel bad about it whatsoever. And so just kind of shifting our habits and spending so that we're seeing the value in a $60 shirt and the dignity that it gives to somebody else and wearing it for much longer than we would wear a top that we just picked up at the store on our way out with our Starbucks cups.
Also the quality of the clothes that are ethically produced is better. So like we're talking about how cheap clothes wear out really quickly, but on the flip side is the fact that when you do purchase like well-made quality clothes, they are going to last longer also, which like you're saying, like you might not have, like you might still be wearing a shirt from 5 years ago because it lasted that long. You know what I mean? Like how many shirts have you, but I keep saying Old Navy because let me just quickly interject. We had scabies this year. And when you have scabies, you have to put literally every piece of cloth or cotton or any kind of like blanket, sheet, clothing through this whole process. So basically, yeah. And it has to, you have to do it for 3 days to kill the scabies. So I had to buy 3 days worth of clothing for everyone in my house, like at the drop, like go now, take off all your clothes. You have to have different clothing for 3 days. And so I went to Old Navy and I bought from the clearance rack 3 days worth of clothing for everyone in my house. I don't think we have any of those clothes left because they didn't last. So right. I think like for people listening who are like, well, you know, it's not so bad. It was only $3. The flip side is when you invest in something, like, yes, you care more about it probably, but also you're going to get your money's worth. Like you're going to be able to wear that thing for much longer.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's important for people to understand too. And so a follow-up question I have for you, Lauren, is you mentioned like when you go shopping now, like you might look at the tag to see where a piece of clothing was made. And so for you, because this is your field, that means something and that gives you some information. But for most of us, that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. So like there used to be some app that I had on my phone that I could never get to work. It was supposed to tell me like I could look up
made in a free world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if that still exists, but like, are there resources for people who are like, I don't know where to even start? I hear you saying Target's not the best and Old Navy's not the best, but like, where do I shop?
Well, of course I'm going to put in a plug for my business in the States. No, I felt the same way as a consumer. Like, where do I shop? And I'm spending so much energy, emotional energy, losing time, researching the internet, trying to find places that are sourcing items that I can feel good about. Okay. And it started, was it 2013? I decided I was going to buy only ethically made Christmas gifts for my family. And so I spent so much time trying to find things, and I got a lot of Noonday collection. And I got a lot of crochet kids from Peru. Mm-hmm. And I found a few other things here and there. But as a general rule, even just 4 or 5 years ago, there wasn't much out there. I am so happy to say that we're still not there, but there are a lot of other companies that are starting to sell items that are almost on trend. It's so much harder to keep up with the trends. It's so hard. It's so hard to keep up with the trends and get all of the raw materials and to get the products made and then to get them shipped to be able to stay on trend with the colors and styles of the season. So like I give slow fashion a break, but we've tried really hard to compile a lot of these companies online with a company that my sister and I started in the States last fall called Wearthy. And everything that we have on our website, I have, and my sister and I together, we have asked hard questions to the companies who make these items. And we feel like we can really stand behind every item on the website and know that it was sourced well. And we've asked really, really hard questions because it's easy to just put on your website, oh, we're fair trade, you know, but that there's a lot that goes into that to actually get a certification to be fair trade. So feel free to check out Wearthy. It's www.wearthy.org. And there's a good place to launch from there, but not all of our staples that we need for our wardrobes are there. So I would say keep your wardrobe simple. Keep your wardrobe simple. So don't feel like you have to have every color under the sun in your wardrobe. I seriously have started limiting my purchases to white, black, dark green, and burgundy color. And almost everything that I wear every day fits within that color scheme. And maybe that's boring, but it's so easy because I can just go and I can mix and match anything in my closet, throw in some denim with it, and it's an outfit and it's more classy. It's timeless. So I don't have to keep up with the trends because they're just timeless pieces that work every single day when I leave the house, and I can change it up with new accessories whenever I want to. So I think giving ourselves the freedom to not have to be the most fashionable person is important. So we don't feel like, oh, I have to keep up with her and I have to keep up with her and I have to keep up with her. You know, I don't have to go into this boutique and spend $150 to get me through the next 2 months of work and look like I'm cute. Like, it's okay if we minimize our purchases, and it's okay if we're buying just basic pieces. Let people see who we are on the inside. It's just, I don't know. This is a self-talk I have to give myself every day.
Well, I like what you said earlier about we don't have to consume, right? So I think there's also you mentioned Noonday. So like if you're in that kind of world where you're getting invited to Noonday parties all the time, or there are more choices for these types of products, which is great, but consuming is still consuming. So there is still this point where we have to say, well, how much do I actually need, you know? And like, what can I get by with? Like how many tank tops does one person need, you know?
Yeah, that's so good. And I, as a business owner, trying to get people to buy things that will support artisans, this is the tension that I live in constantly because I really believe in minimizing our purchases and I believe in purchasing well. And so one thing that I love to do is to share clothes with my friends. And if we can just recycle clothes better, because once you've worn something for a year or two, you kind of get bored with it and tired with it and you don't like it much anymore. But I had a friend that was living here and she just moved back to the States and she left so many clothes. And I just feel like I have a whole new wardrobe. I didn't have to buy any of them and they're not going to a landfill. So I feel like it's a win-win. So mm-hmm. if, you know, just get with your friends and switch out your wardrobes every 6 months to a year and see, oh, I don't really like this. Do you like it? I really, you know, and just see if you can share clothes that way, I think could really help mm-hmm. as well.
I love doing clothes. With yeah. friends or with like a small group or even with like a church or whatever it is, I feel like I always come away with at least, you know, everything might not be my style, but there might be one or two things where it's like, oh, like nobody paid any money. Nobody like wasted anything. It was stuff that we already had that we're kind of giving new life. And it reminds me of that old fashioned kind of quote, the like, use it up, wear it out, make do or do without. And I think that I would be good to remember that, you know, as I'm looking and right now we're recording this kind of in the holiday season where it's like I'm making all of these lists and all of these things and oh, I need to buy this or oh, I need to get this. And then even just looking at the language we use, like, do we really need to buy that? You know, like what do we actually need? So I feel like you've given us so many good things to think about.
Well, yeah, that's a challenge. It's a constant challenge. And I just feel like I live in the tension of that all the time. But can I just say that I love you girls?
I should have said this in the
first 5 minutes, but it's so refreshing to hear from women and to read on y'all's Facebook page, just the kinds of conversations that are happening there. People who are so hungry for justice-oriented conversations. I joke all the time. I'm like, I don't ever get invited to girls' nights out because I don't know how to talk about tabletops. but this is a place where I feel like women can come and really be wise and deep and share. And these conversations are so important. There's so many aspects of our lives that we can be working on and developing and improving. But the fact that you guys are willing to host conversations like this, when I know the kinds of parenting that you're doing at home and the hard ministerial type work that you're doing, to take extra time to record a podcast like this to help other people have this conversation, it's just huge. So thanks for being you, because I just love you gals. And I feel like when I'm washing dishes on Sunday and listening to your podcast, that I just get I have a little friend group somewhere else. So I'm just, it's nice.
Thank you. So I have one more question. I think it might be helpful. We've kind of touched on this a little bit and I really loved the inchworm analogy when it comes to, you know, how mm-hmm. do we begin? Because like Kayla said, it can feel really overwhelming. And I think of a Maya Angelou quote that's, do the best you can until you know better, then when you know better, do better. Mm. And so I think, you know, as we know better, we do have opportunities to do better. But I just wonder if maybe it's helpful to kind of talk through, like, what are the real life barriers that we have personally to making better choices with our purchasing power? Like, what are struggles that we have in our everyday, you know, actual lives?
Well, first of all, you're raising kids, right? And so, and we're all raising kids from hard places. And so that mm-hmm. just, I think all of us can attest to what it feels like to just constantly be keeping your finger on the pulse of your kids' emotions and, mm-hmm. and their, what they're going through. So just in general, like the emotional and mental capacity that it takes to get kids woken up, fed, out the door to school, homeschooled, whatever it is that's a full-time job. And so we just don't have, it's just not easy. It's not easy mm-hmm. to add one more thing to your plate that you have to be considering the ethical, the ethical outcomes of what you're doing and how you're purchasing. Little by little, I think if you'll just click on an article, if you see it shared on Facebook and it sounds like something that you could educate yourself on, just click on it and give yourself 3 minutes to skim it. And if you do that once a month over the course of a year or two, it's going to become your DNA where you are seeking out purchases that are ethical, that are sustainable, that are fair trade, that are well made. And it's going to become so much your DNA that you're going to change how you shop. And it's little by little. And so I'm just trying to bite it off in digestible pieces. When I was back in the States last fall and I walked into a department store, it was the first time that I felt like I don't like any of these clothes and I don't have a desire to buy any of these clothes. And that was the first time that had ever happened for me. It was kind of monumental where that desire to buy what I could buy and the desire, it just wasn't there anymore. But it had taken 5 to 7 years to get there.
What about you, Kayla? Do you have any?
Yeah.
What are your struggles?
Yeah. Oh, that's a whole episode. That's a whole series.
Kayla's struggles.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head, Lauren, when you talked about like being in a stage where you're like mothering lots of young children and that have a variety of different needs. And it's just like, I feel like I sometimes barely have the mind space to like keep everyone, you know, like doing everything that they need to do and healthy and safe and just those kind of everyday needs. And then I'm like, oh, I am going to a wedding and I don't have anything to wear. And so then it's like run out to the mall quick because I have an hour, you know what I mean? And it's like, I got to do this. And, you know, obviously better planning would have helped me figure something out better. And so I think that's part of it is just feeling like I have no mind space. I'm like cramped on time. And then I think there's this other idea, kind of like what you were saying or how it's like, don't have a huge budget. And so then when I am looking at certain items, I'm like, wow, that's beautiful. And I would love to support them. But I have like a thrift store budget right now, not really like a like artisan made dress budget, you know? And so it's like, in those moments, I do feel like I do thrift a lot. And it's something I enjoy doing because I think I enjoy that like thrill of the chase, you know, like finding things and giving them, you know, a new home. And of course we all love getting a good deal, right? So now I really want to go into that like psychological realm, kind of what you're talking about, Lauren, where it's like we like that power and we like to feel that way. So I think those are kind of things that I have worked through and things that I have found like, oh, well, if I like going shopping, I know that that's not probably the best way that I can spend my time or my money or my energy. But if I like, you know, having this bonding experience with a friend, like maybe we'll go to like hit some of the area Goodwills and like have some fun doing that. And obviously you don't ever want to be like filling that void with stuff, which is a no matter what, like whether it's an ethically made necklace or a shirt we buy at the thrift store or something made from an artisan or whatever it is, stuff is still just stuff, right? So we have to have it. I don't think any of our listeners are like walking around naked, you know, without clothes. But yeah, I feel like that's kind of some of the tensions and struggles that I'm wrestling with is just trying to make it all fit in the puzzle.
Yeah. What is it like in the US right now? I mean, what is the, that's a crazy, well, that's a whole nother conversation too, but, as far
Lindsay's
as
like hold my earrings,
coming to visit, that's how it's like.
We're doing just fine over here, but, no, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I am curious, like how is this conversation being had and surrounding this season of like just ultimate consumerism? How are you wading through the waters and how are you keeping your head? How are you keeping your head above the water?
That's a good question.
Well, you know what? I automatically thought of something that Lindsay, you and I have both done, which is fundraised for our families, for adoptions or for like missional living through selling like excess of what we have, items like kids' clothes or our own clothes or our own jewelry. And Lindsay, I just love the name that you had for your Instagram account, which was Redeeming Abundance. And I feel like that that was such a good way to think about it. Because we do, we live, a lot of us live, not all of us, but a lot of us live in a state of abundance.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to answer that question in terms of what's the conversation that's being had. I don't know that I have a great pulse on it. I do feel, I mean, we're like 10 days away from Christmas at recording time. And so I personally feel inundated with emails and ads and just all kinds of craziness. And so, but I feel that way kind of every, you know, December is just, I don't know the weight of it and kind of how far it is from the one that we're celebrating is really hard for me.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, kind of like we talked about, there are more options for using our purchasing power wisely. And so I think people are becoming aware of it and looking to it and, just trying to be wise and trying to educate themselves and trying to do better once they know better. So
it's good.
I feel mostly encouraged aside from the 12 days before. So we are kind of running out of time, but before we kind of talk about where people can find Lauren and Worthy and how to stay connected, I wanted to mention, Lauren, you brought up when we talked about barriers, parenting, right? And like having the mental capacity to think about things. And I think one of the ways that we can make a better planet is by raising kids who are critically thinking about these things. And so I remembered as soon as we started the call, my kids and I actually read a really great kids book on, I mean, this is so perfect. So, it's called Boys Without Names, and, it's about a little boy in India who was, trafficked into a, wasn't a garment factory, but he was making, picture frames. And so it's just a really great, I mean, so my kids are 5 to 9 and I would say they're on the mature end of those ages in some ways, other ways, not so much. but as far as understanding, you know, that human trafficking exists and all of that stuff. But it was just a really good book for us to read as a family and to talk through and to talk about, that's why we don't buy picture frames from Walmart, you know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, that's why we try to think wisely about our money. That's why we don't have 30 t-shirts or, you know, whatever. It just was a really great eye-opening book to read. And so I think the more that we can make these conversations common, then kind of what you said, like it comes along, right? Like the inchworm moves and then the rest of it comes along. And so I think that's one way of doing that is to start to have these conversations among our families. So I just want to make sure to mention that book because it was a very well done and a book that my kids and I both really enjoyed reading. So
good. I wrote it down.
We'll put it in the show note, or we don't do show notes anymore, you guys. We'll put it in on Instagram.
Yeah. And you can look in the iTunes description too. So
cool.
Yes. Yeah. We'll put it out there. We'll put it out there.
Sounds so good.
But okay. So Lauren, tell us, where can people find you and where can we find Worthy online?
Okay. I am on Instagram as Upwardly Dependent. Just feel like I constantly live in this life of if I'm not needing God, then I'm not doing something right. So I just want to live in that way of being dependent on something other than myself. See Enneagram 3 Achiever coming out of me too. I just have to remind myself. So on Instagram as Upwardly Dependent and online, you can find our company as Wearthy. So I'll say again, www.wearthy.org, W-E-A-R-T-H-Y. And it's a spinoff of the idea of everything being worthy for wear. So we have a special coupon code. Can I share that now with the listeners?
Yeah.
We want to give 10% off of your entire purchase to anyone listening to this podcast in January. So that will also be on Instagram and the iTunes description. You have to listen, right? They need to have to listen to the conversation. So those of you listening, if you use upside down 10 will be a coupon code to give you 10.
Is that the number 10 or like spelled out 10?
Good. 10. And people who are Stranger Things fans might also accidentally get the coupon code, but hopefully it'll be for the people listening here.
Yes. Awesome. Well, Lauren, thanks so much.
Yes, thank you, Lauren,
for having this conversation with us.
I'm a big fan of you girls.
Well, right back
at you. We're a fan of yours. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. So, listeners, thanks for listening. And you can find us at Upside Down Podcast on the Instagram. Also on Facebook, and if you would like to continue these conversations, we do that on Facebook in our Facebook group, and that's Upside Down Tribe. So if you search for that and send a request, we'll let you in. And there are some really great people having these kind of conversations on a regular basis. So if that's something you're looking for in your life, we'd love to have you join us. Mm-hmm. But I think that's all for this episode.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening.